The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
From Arista Accounting.
Hello, hello.
And how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Okay, Happy New Year. It's the first time I've seen you since the holidays, isn't it? Although it's almost February now.
I know. And we've made it through another month, almost.
We have.
I know.
So what's new in your world?
Oh, nothing's new in my world. Tax return deadline day is this Thursday.
Yeah.
It's like Christmas Day. It comes every year on the 31st of January. I know Christmas is December the 25th. And yet it's a complete surprise to so many people.
Well, you mean who start getting the shoebox out on the 30th?
Pretty much, yeah.
Sorry.
Some of it's just a shock, really, that you have to do one. So that's keeping us out of trouble at the moment. Mm. And then, but to be fair, we haven't got many left, and I'm hearing horror stories, as usual, about accountants that are working all weekend and all night and all the rest of it. You've got your hand up. Yes, you've got a question.
Can I just ask? Because surely that's great customer service for you, for your customers to go, right, you should be getting in now. So you really, should you be in that position as an accountant to still have people not engaging with them until the 31st? What do you think on that?
I think no. I think they should have already done it.
Yeah.
All of them. But what I would say...
There is only so much you can poke the bear, though, isn't there?
There is. But also, it is that bit of some people just seem to think that we've got psychic powers. You know, well, you did it for me last year, so, it must be the same. Well, might be, might not. But I find it frustrating when you've got clients that pay you all year round and you still can't get information out of them. And you think, well, you've paid me. You paid me to do this. I just want to do it. But in fairness, I think we've got about 30, 40 left. That's not a lot when you've got a big team of accountants.
Got it.
So that's fine. My real problem would be the 20 or 30 that you don't get any information out of. Because, you know, I think this time last year I brought Brad with me, didn't I, RMD?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the numbers that he was quoting that straight away HMRC make, this is £100 a go for everybody who doesn't get their tax return in. That's a brilliant bit of revenue for them, and then it just goes up and up. So just do it. Don't give it away. You've worked hard for it.
The problem is, isn't it, it's like anything that the government touch. Yeah, it's like doing your self-assessment. I was sitting there watching Amanda, my partner, do her self-assessment the other night, because I don't do mine. What?
Neither do I.
Yeah. But anyway, she was doing her self-assessment, and she's going, what does this mean? Oh, I don't know. The forms that HMRC produce are rubbish. They are completely rubbish. They don't make any common sense at all. They use the same terminology for two different things.
Yeah.
You know, like the word expenses appears all over a self-assessment form in different places for different reasons. And it's just really poor. But, of course, they do it because they make money out of it. Because what people do is they go, do you know what? I can't work this out. I'll do it later. Mm. And they put it to one side and put it to one side and put it to one side until it's too late.
Mm.
And then they panic and just fill out any whole thing in there because they can't think of what to do. And really, it's about time that HMRC got their finger out and designed some proper systems for doing it. They're going to make us all go
digital tax, so they
need to get their act together.
I think it will come. I mean, Making Tax Digital hits from the 1st of April, so if anybody doesn't know, this will be the change of VAT returns initially. And again, though, straight away, different rules and regulations. So if you're VAT registered but you don't turn over to the VAT threshold, you don't have to do it through the new system. So, you know, straight away, there's complications, we're bringing this in. Oh, but if it's you don't have to do it. So you're looking at all these different people and how it works and all the rest of it. But it will be the end of the spreadsheet, the shoebox and everything else. You have got to submit it through software. You can't submit it through HMRC's website unless you've got certain rules and regulations that apply to you.
Mm.
And it's just going to be a very different way. And it will change. And we've talked about it before, haven't we, Paul?
If
you were running, you know, Great Britain Limited, what a nightmare to try and work out your cash flow. Because how would you ever know what money was coming in?
Yeah.
So you can see why you need to digitalise it and understand more about what revenues do and et cetera, et cetera. But it's going to be a hard few years and everyone's going to have to do it, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. It's interesting that the market's responding to a lot of this with some innovative products
like
Coconut Card and things like that, which are really interesting because that will enable you to automate your spending as a very small business without having to do anything. You just have one card that does all your bookkeeping for you when you spend your money.
It's amazing, and we're looking at some software at the moment, but I find, again, the thing is that we can look at it, we can get it in place, we can look at what time it saves people, but instead of thinking like that, they think of it as a cost, instead of realising that when you're running a business, that's your time, and that's worth far more than bookkeeping.
It's more than that as well, isn't it? Because it isn't a cost, it's the fundamentals of running your business, because cash flow management and monthly accounts are just so crucial.
Yeah.
As an angel investor, I talk to loads and loads of startup businesses, and we all hate it. None of us went into business to be accountants, let's face it, or bookkeepers or
some
whatever.
Some of us might have done, Paul. Some of us.
Yeah. We remember them from school. Yeah. The specky ones. Yeah.
Do be quiet. I'm wearing grey. What do you want?
Exactly.
The specky ones.
So rude.
The ones that had a slide rule. You know, those ones, yeah, and knew what it was and how to use it, yeah. But
we've called it set one maths.
See, there you go again, specky. What can I tell you?
That's why I never met you.
Cool. Oh, I heard about that.
But the reality is that despite the fact that we don't like it, it is crucially important that we manage our businesses by having a handle on what's going on. And you can't do that if you don't keep your books up to date. You don't know what cash flow you've got. You don't know who owes you money. You don't know whether your business is viable or not, even. And that's what catches so many people out.
I agree. But also, I think there's too many people there who try and be their own accountant to save money.
Yeah, yeah.
I spoke to a lady yesterday who told me she'd done her own accounts in the first year and now she needed some help. This is a straight up true story. And I said, okay, that's great. I said, so you submitted all your own accounts? She said, yes. I went on to Company's House while I was talking to her, and she'd submitted her confirmation statement. So her accounts were now overdue, and it was my pleasure, not pleasure at all, to tell her that she was already in a fine of £750 and she still hadn't done her accounts. And you know, and you just think, even if I did them on the cheap, you're going to spend how much? 1,500, 2 grand to get your accounts done because you thought you were saving money by doing it yourself.
Yeah.
If you don't understand what you're doing, don't do it.
Do it, yeah.
We wouldn't service our own cars, would we, or cut our own hair? I just don't get
it. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, maybe. I just find it amazing how people, you know.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
And cut corners, and it doesn't generally.
Yeah. I've told you this story so many, rift of my accountants. I've told this story so many times. I once posted a tweet saying, I'm going to see my accountants on Friday. And loads of people went, oh, you poor thing. Oh, that's horrible. Why? I like going to see my accountants. They're really useful people. They help a lot. And everybody went, oh, isn't it a bit like going to see the headmaster? Don't they tell you off? I went, no.
But also, we had a classic, didn't we, Paul, with that guy you knew wanted to buy a company and transfer the shares. <That's brilliant. laughs> God, you'll have to tell that one because I can't remember it all now. But I remember just ringing you up and going, Paul, we can't do this.
Guy wanted me to take a share in his company. The company had been running quite a long time and they were struggling.
And Paul asked me to do some due diligence on it.
And so I said, well, okay, we'll look into this. What are you doing? And he sent me the books and it was a bit bad and all the rest of it. But I thought I could do something with it. And I said, well, look, what I'll do is I'll buy 20% of the company or whatever and kind of turn it around for you. And he went, oh, brilliant. And then he started trying to negotiate with me. Well, you know, could you only have 10? I went, no. And if you keep negotiating, it's going to go the other way, you know, because I'm doing you a favour. Anyway, we settled on this figure that I was going to give him X amount of money for 20% of the company. And I rang Nettie and I went, make it so, Nettie. So she went away for a couple of days and she came back and she said, you can't have shares in the company. Why? She said, I haven't got any.
This was a shareless company.
it was a non-limited company. And it was guaranteed, it was a limited by guarantee of £100. So there was no shares.
There was nothing
in the company at all.
Give him a pound.
So I rang the guy and I went, I can't be a shareholder and I can't buy shares from you because you haven't got any. And he went, have we not? No.
And this was the classic. I've set it up myself and I've ticked the wrong boxes.
Yeah,
it's
basically
as classic as that. And they'd run it for years, hadn't they?
Without realising.
I think they'd taken dividends. So
interesting. They've been paying dividends and all kinds.
Going on there somewhere. Because they normally come from profits and paid on shares in when I went to school in class one.
Being a specky. Yeah.
Thanks a lot. So I'm a specky and you've got hairy legs. Yeah. How are you feeling about today?
It's good. It's good, isn't it? But no, it's important. Anyway, Nettie, as always, you also deliver us very interesting guests to talk to.
It's a build-up for you there.
Right? Yeah.
You're interested now. Okay, so start with that. Yeah.
So why don't you tell us who you bought, why you bought them, and introduce them.
Okay, well, today I've brought Russell with me. I've brought him because he'll make us laugh just by being here.
Right.
Please watch your language, Mr. Payne.
Oh, dear.
And Russell and his lovely partner, Claudia, have been clients of mine for a while. You came for a different type of accounting, didn't you? No, I mean that you were with a one-man band type accountant and you needed a different type of support and a different sort of interaction, which I think you get. And you've got my lovely Rachel as your accountant. But, you know, it's just been really interesting to me to get to know Russell and Claudia, get to know the business that they've bought, grown, adapted, changed, and are passionate about for lots of different reasons. And I think the best person to sell anyone's business is the person who owns it.
Absolutely.
So I think I'm going to leave you to talk to Russell and I'll laugh a lot at the answers.
Oh, good. Probably. Russell, welcome to the Business Bunker Show.
Thank you, Paul. I'm not sure I can...
Yeah, can rise to that challenge. It's a pleasure to meet you and it's a pleasure to have you on the show for the first time. Kick off by telling us a bit about your business. And... No, you tell us a bit about it, and I'll tell you something about that in a minute.
Okay, right. Yeah. Well, Bloomsbury's is...
it's an everything.
No, I'm just remembering, before I go on, I was remembering we met with George Davis, serial entrepreneur. Sorry, I banged the table. That was terrible.
That's awful.
And we bumped into him because he was admiring Claudia's legs and feet and in a hotel in Broadway. And he got chatting and invited us back for dinner and at this beautiful place, Russell's in Broadway, which is gorgeous. And we went back and we were quite excited to meet this guy, having done the homework. I thought, blimey, he's really quite someone. And then he said, now then, give us your strap line. What are you? And we mumbled a bit, looked at each other, go, no, not good enough, and that was the end of that. And we had a nice dinner and chatted a bit, but we walked away thinking, idiots, why did we not have a strapline? So, because Bloomsbury's has evolved into a great many things. Overall, it is a venue. Mm. It is a venue that contains a restaurant, glamp site, recording studio, therapy and spa studios. There's going to be a hairdressing salon as from February, as long as I can get Gary to come and put the boiler in.
He doesn't do boilers.
Oh, no, it's not a gas one. It's all right, it's okay. we've already checked that off later, so it's all good.
Already done.
And what else? What have I missed?
You've got a log cabin.
Oh, yeah, and the log cabin. Hopefully we'll get a second one built if we can get our leader grant. Please, the powers that be at leader, say yes. Mm.
Well, you've also got on site, haven't you? You've got all your environmental stuff. So
yes, I mean, I was just talking earlier about how, off air, about how inadvertently trendy we have ended up being, which is quite uncomfortable because obviously, as I say, I still listen to Led Zeppelin, and and as you can see from, I'm not interested in the current trends. However, it just so happens that stylistically and mission wise, we have hit on the current way of being, which is a great deal of used, recycled, upcycled, creating something from nothing and kind of making it look a bit chic. And that's Claudia's business. I just do as I'm told, usually. But the shabby chic thing just happens to be very en vogue. And the glamping was... in business terms, the last throw of the dice, because we'd operated the business as Greek plate spinners for the 3 years from 2007 to 2011. And because the tenants all left when the financial hit the fan. And it was really the last throw of the dice. So at that point in 2011, we were really struggling. And it was a great, that was the great moment that solidified the offer and actually helped to generate the company that we currently now have.
We're going to talk about that in a moment. I'm going to take you back a bit, and I kind of half made reference to this, because I live kind of around the corner from you, really, in Centerton. Where you are, used to be a garden centre.
Indeed.
Many years ago. So presumably you bought the garden centre, is that how it worked?
We did, yeah. We did. It was called Garden Crafts.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it had been a failed nursery for a number of years, yep, and had gone through many, many different incarnations, all of varying degrees of failure.
Yeah.
So at the time we bought it, it was a really struggling business, but there was something charming about the place. There was something eclectic and something that really tickled our fancy. And little Talia, who's now 18, was six at the time, and she was wandering through one of the little kissing gates, and she said, "I really would love it if we could buy this. I'm going to wish that we can have this." And because we don't want to let her down, we said yes.
Yeah, that's your kids, they drive you nuts, don't they? Yeah, I don't want to buy this business, but the kids, you know, what can you do?
We were recommended, because we had a little small property portfolio of some houses, and somebody said, "No, you don't want to buy residential, you want to buy commercial. That's where it's happening." Mm-hmm. And I will shoot that person if I can. that was something that made Claudia look out, and she became aware of the fact this place was for sale. It took a long time to negotiate the sale, because the guy selling it was very stuck in treacle, and the whole place was stuck in treacle. It was very difficult to get things moving. And because we knew absolutely nothing about business, about, we were just landlords, and it was a very, very sharp awakening, a rude awakening.
And I interrupted you somewhat. You were talking about your epiphany moment in 2011. Go back to that. Take us back to that. To what happened there.
We did always want to do something. There was a derelict area of 2 acres at the back of the site that had no use whatsoever. It was just thistles and stingers and stuff with trees and stuff. We always imagined the idea of there being something there, and we loved the idea of log cabins or something that would allow you to offer accommodation. And we knew this was always going to be tricky with regards to planning and the council and whatever. And a friend of ours, Chris at Big Hill Teepees, big up Chris, built lovely teepees. And he had one at our place on display. And it became a kind of, this is what we're going to do. And Claudia's a bit like that. She kind of thinks, well, I'm going to make this happen. And somehow by magic, it ends up happening. And I don't quite know how, but that's the way she does it.
Entrepreneurial spirit.
Well, yeah. And really, that teepee was the kind of statement of intent. And we bought it off him and kept it for 2 years, from 2009 to 11, before we'd even started the glamp site. And then another friend, who Penny Kemp, who it was the first person to illuminate us into the whys and wherefores of the yurt, which, again, back in 2009, 2010, no one had even heard of. And she described it to me. I said, "I don't know what you're talking about." You know, she said, "Oh, no, and it's got these crisscross lattices, and it's really beautiful."
It's a tent, love. over it.
Well, I was kind of thinking that. She said, "No, it's much better than the TV because it's not open at the top." And I thought, that makes sense. So you don't get wet. So that's got to be a good thing. We ended up buying a couple of yurts, and it was a bit like the producers, where we bought these things absolutely potless, and we had to kind of take bookings. And so we got the planning permission on the sort of 10th of January, and on the 11th of January I advertised it. On the 12th of January we had our first bookings. No pitches. So we were sort of, book them, they will come. And then we managed to find a great company, LPM Bohemia in Horseman Den, who helped us to finance them so that we could paying them in piecemeal fashion, and they got them set up.
And they're expensive yurts.
Oh, yeah.
Aren't they?
Yeah. To buy a 20-foot yurt is £7,000 plus.
Wow, okay.
And then you have to build the base as well, and then you have to supply the power, and then you have to insulate it. It's another couple of grand. So, yeah, they're not
expensive,
cheap.
Expensive, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And then every year we were so knocked out and surprised by the response that we got. That every year we just plough back all the money because we're idiots, and we just plough all the money back into redeveloping and rebuilding it up and
buying another yurt.
And yeah. buying it, so yeah, now we've got 4 yurts. I mean, so we had so many group bookings, which was a real surprise to us. And we found out that there were these safari tents that somebody talked to us about, and they're like Centrinian's dormitory because you can set them up with all these beds in a row. So they're great for hen weekends. So they can all sit there and hang out together in their one space. So we've got two of those. And then to add accommodation, we used sole pad teepees. So basically a glorified bell tent. They're just like a little mini teepee. And you can get 4 or 5 people in those.
Right.
And we removed those, the only movable structures. So we put them around the 7 pitches on the site to add extra accommodation. So you can actually only one point. Have up to 100 people on the site.
Wow.
In a weekend.
Okay. And for you, that was a turning point for the business?
It was 100% the turning point of the business. In many ways, not least, obviously, it gave us money, but it also solidified the offer. It helped us to understand what worked and what didn't. And we began to finally understand that retail just wasn't our bag. And we were not much cop at it. And actually, the public appetite for the kind of retail we were doing didn't appear to be there.
Yeah.
And I have every respect for small local run garden centres. There are several which I think are wonderful. But I think it is something that requires a huge amount of personal time and dedication.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Way above and beyond what I was able to spend. I'm just too old. And I can't. You're putting those hours into watering the plants. We did it for 2 years. It was deadly. And it allowed us then to just concentrate on developing the venue so we could then grub out the old garden centre, put turf there, build the wedding gazebo, create the structures and the space in it, and the magic has kind of really come from there.
But you've got more than camping, because I'm just looking here, and you've got...
That's my gaff, yeah, that's my
studio. You've got a recording studio.
That's been man cave, yeah.
Yeah.
What made you put a recording studio there?
Well, funnily enough, Paul, I had a splinter business, because I was a part-time school teacher, rock star, and then had this company called Star Makers, which was going on the back of this pop stars thing in the early noughties. And it was periodically, superbly... effective. We do things called pop parties where children would come along and record a CD for 3 hours, pay us a couple of £100, and then come away with a little photo CD of them singing their song.
Yeah.
And the studio was really busy with that. I was doing supposedly doing some proper work, but that kind of filled the coffers. And we had so many bookings at the point when we sold our house to Buy Blooms, which was, yes, we are that daft, that we had to say...
You live in a yurt, then, do you?
Indeed, yeah. We had to build a studio, which the previous owner kindly allowed us to build before we'd even completed on the sale.
What?
So we had to put the studio in the back office, which is now the kitchen, in order to satisfy the bookings we already had.
So do you get big bands coming down and staying all weekend, and then you
sometimes,
or do you have to sign NDAs?
No. I'd love to say yes, and I've heard loads. Yeah, yeah, some really big ones. Not that many pop stars. No, not yet.
How interesting.
I'd love to though.
I mean, it just makes sense to me. I'm like, you've got a recording studio. We're just outside London. For
goodness sake, you've got a hippie camp on site.
Why aren't we getting you some top bands to come down?
Well, you do have bands, don't you?
We do. Yeah, I mean, we've had some good connections, and I've got a good friend of mine, Kevin Armstrong. He's Mr. Superstar. He's been friends with Bowie and toured with Iggy Pop and Shadow Connor and blah blah blah. He came with Thomas Dolby's band and stayed over a few years back, and that was fun. But it wasn't anything like as developed as it is now, so they were a bit chilly. He spent most of the night on the toilet, the camping toilet, on the floor, because it was underfloor heated, so he decided to be kicked there for most of the night.
And that's where the inspiration came.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The creative area.
Yeah. But the food and stuff that you do as well is amazing, isn't it?
Well, again, that's part of Claudia's mission, that she's always been into good food and healthy and inspired. And again, her menu back in 2008 would stand up today as being the most current and super trendy menu. There are loads of huge salads and different things and big vegan and vegetarian bias. But we sort of had the stuffing knocked out of us by having to sort of think, oh, now you've got to serve burger and chips, you've got to serve da da da. And it's interesting, if you keep your focus and dedication, you can actually get there in the end.
I think, absolutely.
You've got to be determined to. But there are always compromises with staffing, with how it's run, because it's such a big concern that you've got to kind of cut your cloth sometimes to work with what you have.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah, absolutely you have, yeah. So, Russell, you got all these things. You mentioned a hairdressing salon.
Well,
it
is happening. It was one of those things where a random act of kindness seems to result in a huge beneficial outcome. And this beautiful couple, Tom and Becky, who got married at our place a couple of years ago, set up a chiropractic a practice in the village of Biddenden. And in December, they suffered the most appalling fire.
Which tore through their entire place.
Mm. And we were really genuinely upset for them. And the village were great. They pulled together and got money for them, because all their Christmas presents for the kids and everything, their clothes, the possessions, everything was destroyed. It was awful. Mm. And we asked if there's anything we can do. And Emma, Becky's sister, said, yeah, actually, there is. You could ask if you can let them use the therapy rooms, which we've got. And of course, we said, yeah, great, and just have it for a couple of months and set yourselves up there and make yourselves at home. And they came and were so happy there that they've decided to stay. They want to stay there with the chiropractic centre. But in addition, they needed somewhere for the hairdressers to temporarily locate whilst the place is being renovated, because they've got 50-something old clients who are desperately looking for somewhere to have their hair done.
Yeah.
And of course, every day that goes by, you're losing clients, and that's the problem. So they were talking to the insurance company, and the insurance company will pay for them to relocate. So we've got the groundworks guys in at the moment, digging the drains in, and then Gary's going to come and sort the boiler out, and then hopefully the beginning of next month, by the first week of February, they should be in.
Fantastic.
And that was the former shop, which is the far end of the...
Right.
Nettie knows it.
Can you believe that you're where you are today?
It is sometimes a bit bizarre, yes. I don't...
Was this a vision?
No,
was
it... No. Claudia will say yes, so she should be here. She'll go, yes, it was what I ordered.
But see, this happens all the time. My finger's loaded. I'm pointing. This happens all the time, and it drives me nuts. You hear so many entrepreneurs, when they've kind of got there, they then go and do talks about how they spotted a gap in the market and how they... It never worked like that, ever. It was always by accident, always, yeah? We try stuff. Absolutely. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. Some of it half works. Some of it we force to work.
Yes, yeah. And I think having a bit of canny sense to spot a turkey and not to just pursue something blindly for your blind ambition has to be nuanced against the possibility that you just need to keep going.
Yeah.
And and that is the balancing act that is really difficult. And I've felt for many, several periods of time, are we doing the right thing? Should we just turn around and go back? Or do you just keep going? That's the tough call.
Cool. I love what you're doing. Kent is very short of event space. There isn't a lot of event space in the county, and of certain types as well. You know, there's loads of hotels and things, but outside of that, pure event space is very short supply. So what have you got planned for the future? Do you know?
Well, the planning application for regularising what we've already done,
the retrospective planning.
Well,
I don't know. some Mongol warrior just turned up and stuck their yurt in my garden, mate. Genghis, he said his name was.
The problem was that there were we had the council around about three times in the first year we were there, because I think several curtain twitchers got a bit worried about what we were up to. And there was a shed which we put up, and the council came round to spot the shed, and they said, what have you got there? I said, well, it's a garden shed. And what are you using it for? Well, currently we've got six guinea fowl in it. Uh-huh. So they made us apply for a retrospective application for poultry housing, which then resulted in another neighbour... She's never spoken to me since. She said, I'm going to start a chicken farm. And actually nearly assaulted me in the park over this chicken farm that we were going to have. So on it goes. And that meant that everything you do, because it's non-residential, you don't have any permitted rights.
Yeah.
Everything you do is monitored and needs to be applied for. But if we were to do that, because it's evolved so quickly and so much, would be exhausting. And not only that, if I was to say in 2008, what we was going to be doing, it would be completely wrong.
Yeah,
because it's changed immeasurably from what we originally thought.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're now regularising what we've already got that includes the safari lodges, which weren't originally there, a couple of the spaces which have been built over. Well, it's not a great expansion in footprint, but it's just a change of use mainly.
Yeah, sure.
What we have.
Yeah. Cool.
There's so many questions to just go from there, isn't there? Nettie's looking at me going, don't even ask.
I love a meeting with Russ and Claudia because when I think we're going to do this, I find that we're over here. It's always fun.
Well, yeah, I try and keep focused, but it never works. We just have too much fun. That's a problem.
Where do you see it going? What do you want from Bloomsbury?
Well, we've got to the point in our lives where we're getting on a bit and the energy can't be sustained to run so many things. Not only that, I think it can't work efficiently if you're trying to do too many things at once. So we're trying to return to source, really, to become the overlords and allow the businesses to flourish in their own respect, possibly under the umbrella branding, to allow other people to thrive. And we've managed to do that with Amy, who runs Feet Beats, the dance lodge. It's wonderful. She's been there since 2015. Fantastic, and we have a great relationship with her, which is based on primarily on friendship and on mutual respect and trust. And that if you can get that, your tenancy agreement isn't worth bothering with. Then we've got Marcus and his e-bikes, which is great. And now with Tom and Becky in the chiropractic and the therapy rooms working as well. So I'm hoping that we can sort the restaurant out with a tenant, the wedding venue possibly, and then the glamping site, and then I can run away. And make a hit record.
I believe it's coming.
I doubt that won't happen.
Exactly.
That'll happen, Russell. I don't know what it'll be.
Well, the record.
Yeah, the record. What do you reckon?
I've got some ideas.
Have you? Yeah, I bet you have. What do I say to that? See.
Brilliant is what we say to that.
Thank you.
Russell, thank you so much for that. That's really good. If people want to find out about the manic things that you're doing at Bloomsbury Bidenden, how can they do that?
The website, www.glampingkent.com or bloomsburysbidenden.com. They both point to the same hole because I haven't got two websites yet, but we're going to do a glamping website, which is why we've got glampingkent.com.
Right.
But currently bloomsburysbidenden.com is glampingkent.com. They're one and the same. And they're on the old Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well.
Fantastic. Russell, thank you so much for that. Absolutely brilliant.
Thank you.
And we love what you're doing. Keep on keeping on.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.